Hey guys, welcome to episode 7 of the JV Club. Just a couple of things I wanted to say up top. First, I need to apologize for the sound issues in the first few minutes of this recording. I know nobody wants to start listening to a podcast and be forewarned of sound issues, but please don't turn it off. It's not that bad. I've actually been sitting on this episode for this particular reason, but at the end of the day, I'm just too in love with my guest, Carrie Kinney Silver, to keep her wonderfulness to myself any longer. So hang in there. Actually, side note, this was actually the very, very first episode that I ever recorded. And my friend and yours, Matt and Myra, had come over to record it, and we didn't realize that Carrie's mic wasn't working until several minutes in. So if you can withstand a little bit of my voice being just a little louder, she sounds really far away for just a bit. My voice, obviously, louder equals more grating, even more than usual. If you can withstand that, I promise it does get better pretty quickly on. We just end up sharing a mic. And then all of this reminded me that I wanted to not only thank Matt and Myra for recording that first episode, but also to thank Paul Gilmartin for recording a couple of them there at the beginning as well, before he frankly got sick of me. And he just helped me buy all my gear so that I could do it all myself, which is what I do now. I also wanted to let you know that there's a cake-like song at the end of the podcast. That's Carrie's band, so I hope you enjoy that. And here comes the pesky plug. If you can stand to leave positive reviews on iTunes, blah, 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 insert my super mega gratitude here, because I honestly do appreciate it so, so much. So thank you, all of you guys who've been doing that. It just is awesome. I am super humbled by the wonderful things that you've said. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And now, without further ado, I welcome you in to the 7th, yet technically first, episode of the JV Club.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey, you're listening to the JV Club. My name is Janet Varney. I have a guest with me that I just couldn't be more excited to have sitting on my rug in my home. Didn't even offer her a chair. Unfortunately, she is having to sit on the floor. It's very 70s. She put her keys in a bowl when we got here, and it's a big, sexy 70s key party. Carrie Kinney Silver, welcome.
Thank you for having me on your floor.
Thank you so much for being here. You are hilarious.
Thank you.
You are someone I've been a fan of for a very long time, which makes me suddenly feel like I shouldn't be able to say that because I want to be young enough that I couldn't have been a fan of anyone for a long time.
I am not a fan of people who come up and go, my dad used to watch you.
What?
All the time. My parent. And I feel like, why can't you just say, like, I'm a fan or
right,
something, but always they have to justify it with, my parents used to watch you.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Used that, wow, parents and used to, that's a real double whammy.
Like if they could somehow fit in the sentence, and you look kind of fat today, that's right. That's basically how I feel.
Right. But what's funny about that is that you've performed at the comedy festival that I run, and I feel like the people who come out to see those shows are our age or younger. It's not like, yeah, we're bringing out people who you weren't on Mary Tyler Moore. Let's be clear about that.
But I think that I feel like they make me feel sometimes like they see episodes of The State or Viva Variety or something on, like at the library.
Right. Right. By the way, my dog is really interested in Carrie and yes, was just sniffing her hair. And I want to say, marvelous job of not being distracted
really
by the fact that
hair.
He's dropping toys at your feet
but
right
what
now.
What I'm concerned about is your cat has a lump on his neck. But I think
yeah,
like,
she has a little skin tag.
Yeah, okay.
She has a little skin tag. She's 15.
Oh, honey, you're
yeah,
old like me.
And she acts like a kitten, right? My mom used to watch you. I clearly have a very worried, very old lady grandma cat in me.
Is that how you're gonna sound when you're
old? Hello, I'm a big fan.
I'm old. I'm talk like this.
It's like I'm singing, but I'm ancient.
So, you know, I've read interviews with you. You guys did an amazing state reunion at SF Sketchfest, yes, which is my festival.
Thanks
to you. You guys talked a ton about working together as a sketch group in college. I also want to kind of avoid the, oh, you were the only girl in an all-male sketch troupe. What must have that been like? Because I know, yeah, I was with a group, you know, with three people, three dudes other than me, and it never felt like, oh, I'm the woman. Like, it never, right, felt that way. It just felt like we were sort of all unisex kind of. We were just people.
I agree with that, coming from being the only woman in that group. However, there is something great, I feel like, from the outside, to be able to say that a woman could fit into that world.
Yeah.
And have it be seamless.
Yes.
Was, I feel like, a great accomplishment. Not my accomplishment, just that it worked.
Yeah.
And when I see other women in things, that it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They try, Comedy Central, or where were we? The MTV did say, okay, now how about, you know, I don't know, is there going to be color? Is there going to be more women? And we said, this is just who we are.
This is, yeah.
So we didn't sit down and say, let's find one woman and 10 men.
Right. And it wasn't like a boy band situation where a network gets together and tries to find this.
It was a boy band.
Oh, it was.
We were originally a boy band.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, we were not good. And we realized we were better at comedy.
Most boy bands are really good.
Yeah, no,
so that's the surprise.
We were terrible. We don't know how to sing and we can't dance. So
wow.
It didn't work out.
I'm glad the comedy thing ended up kind of coming together. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't want to... I love the idea of you having to look down and see Westport, Connecticut.
Yeah, sure.
Small town?
That's
school?
Me. That's me.
So you're from Westport, Connecticut, rumor has it.
I was.
Is that just sort of a suburban community where you're going? I'm from the West Coast, so I don't know, but is it sort of small town, go to a big school at a big city, or was it just a smaller community?
It's a smaller community. This is how I have, like, this little speech that I give when I run into people at cocktail parties and you go, where are you from?
Yeah.
Westport, Connecticut was where I spent my weekdays, my school days growing up, and that was the equivalent on the West Coast is Malibu, where I live now, coincidentally.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it is basically a J. Crew catalog.
Okay.
Is what is Westport.
Lovely. That's sort of what I think of when I think of the East Coast anyway.
Crab parties. I've never been to that. But you know what I'm saying? And then I spent my weekends in New York City with my dad, who my parents were divorced.
Yeah.
And spent weekends and anytime I could in the city with my dad. Spent summers with my grandparents in Pekin, Illinois.
Oh,
which,
okay,
is the tiniest. They just got a stoplight, front page of the newspaper.
Yeah, I think I read about that.
Yeah, it's a big deal. So I had all that stuff, and I'm really grateful for it. A lot of small town, and then a lot of New York too.
And you have a brother and a sister?
Half. I have a half.
Half. Okay.
Were
okay.
Divorced.
Uh-huh.
My father remarried and had my sister and my brother. And I'm more like an aunt. Because
and so, yeah, are you?
I grew up an only child. My brother just graduated NYU last week.
Okay. Okay.
And my sister, right at this very moment, is having her second child.
Oh,
as a younger person. She's in her 20s. So.
We should have done this podcast from the hospital room.
I know. That's what I'm thinking.
What a mistake.
But, yeah. Something exciting might happen with my body, though, because I did have a taco.
Hey!
Not as exciting as
well,
not as exciting.
But markedly similar, for those of you who don't know much about physiology.
Right,
okay, so interesting that you are an only child. What, and from, and did your mom remarry?
My mom did not. My mom fascinates me. Her story fascinates me because she was married to my dad for, I guess, like 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
Just didn't work out. They're still very good friends.
Mm-hmm.
She went on one date since their dog is
really he's freaking
I really
out
get, I excite
you know what I might have to put him outside
because we're talking about divorce. It's a hot topic.
I think we might have to pause while I put him outside because right now he's Matt Myra is here helping me run this podcast and now he's playing tug of war. Okay, we are back. The dog is outside and I've just warned Carrie. I'm anticipating his woof that is very specific to, hey, FYI, I am out here and I would love to be in the mix.
My dog does that too. It's a single.
So, yep.
Woof.
It's just a little attention seeking.
Yoo-hoo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty cute. We're going to ignore it if it happens. I hope that it picks up on the mic.
It's not that cute. So we'll ignore it.
We will ignore it. Okay. So,
So, yeah, this is weird because everything you're saying is pretty much my upbringing so far in terms of, like, how long my parents were married and being an only child, but I don't have any siblings.
But my mom has had essentially one, I don't know, date, one very short-lived boyfriend who was a priest after my father. And then that was it. And she's just done.
Me too. That's how my mom was. Just done. When my parents split up, which was when I was, like, 5, how old were you?
7.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So... And then she was done. And I've never seen my mom be in a relationship with anyone. And she's great.
Ever.
And yeah, she's just... And it's not a matter of, like, she's miserable. She never talks about it. She's super happy with her life.
But I brought it up one time.
She was like, yeah, done.
I said one time to her, Mom, if you're gay, that's awesome. And she... Okay. My mother has many gay friends. She has many friends who are not gay. But when I said to her, if you're gay, that's okay, she went, Carrie! Oh, Jesus! You know what? Enough. She has her stuff where she likes it.
Yep.
Her channel changer TiVo is set to the shows she likes.
Oh, yeah. My parents are so comfortable in the space that they're in with, they like it how they like it, and they've been doing it for so long that whatever companionship might bring to the table is absolutely not as interesting.
No, any negative is just not worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works.
Which I get. I kind of get it. But I would have loved to have seen someone sort of cherish my mom.
Yeah.
Because I feel like she's adorable.
That's a nice way to put it. That's a nice way to put it.
Somebody kind of feeding back to her all the great things about her, because I just don't think you get that. You don't get that from friends.
That's a beautiful way to put it. But it's funny because I only saw it the other way, which is she's dodged all the douchebags.
Well, there's that.
But that is
true. Except for the priest.
Except for the priest. No, he was a douchebag.
How does that work?
Oh, my Lord.
That he was a priest.
My mother is the secretary at the church.
Okay.
And this guy was, single. He's not a priest. He's a minister in a Methodist church. And they are able to marry and date and everything.
Oh, okay.
And he was just, he was something else, that guy. He was a piece of work. And
How old were you when she was
married? I think I was about 12 or 13. And I was not a fan.
Yeah.
Wasn't,
and how long did she date him?
Didn't work for me. It's all about me.
Did you say that? How long she dated them?
Minutes.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, minutes.
So it wasn't even,
No.
And that was the one foray
that was
into...
The one.
This is what it's like when mom has a boyfriend.
Let's let loose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Now, did you go to church with your mom?
I did.
And did you want to, or did she make
you? I wanted
you?
To. I loved it. I had a very different experience with religion growing up than most of my, funny friends now, which is that...
Yeah, religion's not hip.
It's not
in,
hip.
In the comedy
it's
world.
Not necessarily hip. Judaism's pretty hip. But,
that's true.
But devout anything is not very hip.
Right.
And I'm very hip. No. No, I went to the Methodist church growing up as a kid, and it wasn't, it wasn't my choice, but it wasn't, I didn't go unwillingly.
Right.
It's just what we did.
Yeah.
And we went every Sunday, and I was very much a part. I was in the youth group. We had a terrific event every year called the Rockathon, where
Hello.
We would rock in a rocking chair in the church basement overnight to raise money for charity.
I don't know what I thought it was, but I didn't know it was going to be that much of a snore. That's impressive.
Pretty sexy.
That's impressive.
So I loved it. I had a great experience. I had a lot of friends from there, a lot of, for lack of a cooler word, fellowship. I had no negative experience with the religious aspect
the
at all. In fact,
kind of
my minister at my Methodist church was a lesbian woman.
Oh, nice.
And she was all about... questioning.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what, when I went through the straight edge hardcore punk phase and was still at church at the Rockathon saying, well, maybe there is no God.
Yeah.
She was there to go, maybe there isn't. Why do you think that? Let's talk about that. Instead of, you're banished to the back.
Yeah.
Whatever. So I had a great experience with it.
That's awesome. When I had to go to Mormon church with my mom, she had custody of me on Sundays, and I went willingly too. Although my dad was,
but I love that you just said had to custody
For sure, for
willingly.
Sure. I
Those
mean, yeah,
things
no, no,
don't
no, 100% true. There were definitely well. What's funny is that I did go unwillingly when I was much younger, and it wasn't about it wasn't about hating the church. It was about my mom. Like, I just wanted to, I knew it was important to her. So yeah. It became real important to me not to want to go when I was 7, 8, 9.
Of course.
Blaming people for divorce.
Of course.
But then when I went through my punk rock phase and was wearing black lipstick and dog collars, although I was not straight edge.
That dog collar's terrific on you, by the way.
Thank you very much.
It's
you
really
don't
nice.
The studs are a bit much?
I don't think so. I also like it's a little loose because as we get older, our skin sags.
Oh,
and that
absolutely.
One does not.
Well, I also have a very broad, guttural sort of a laugh, and the strain on my vocal cords is too much if I keep it real tight.
I've been using the elastic ones.
You have? Well, that's a wonderful. It's like putting on your house clothes when you get home. You just get nice and comfortable.
Well, I have a house dog collar that I put on.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
Terry cloth?
Yeah, it's terry cloth.
Love it.
Yeah, it matches my head wrap and my slippers.
God, we have very similar
lives.
We're
so similar.
But anyway, I guess I was going to say that I always felt like the Mormon church that talks about self-educating and asking questions and portends, like when you get baptized in the Mormon church, you're 8. And the idea is that you're not baptized when you're a baby because you need to be baptized when you're old enough to be making the choice.
Make a choice. Which love that any 8-year-old could make any choice.
They should be able to drink and vote and drive as well.
My 5-year-old's choice is often to not wear underwear and sometimes pull his pants down in public. So I would love that he would make a life decision.
Now's a good time to ask him how he feels about the Latter-day Saints.
Yeah.
That was sort of the hypocrisy for me, was feeling like once I got to the teenage age, I actually loved going and I felt totally accepted, even though I would sort of, I was toning down my Robert Smith look when I went to church, but I still clearly stood out. Yeah. I always felt super accepted by everybody there, but I did feel frustrated that I felt like it was actions, but or words, but not actions. It was absolutely. Ask questions, seek the truth, but then not really.
Okay,
you know, so
okay.
That was kind of frustrating for me. But
yeah.
So were you? I mean, were you popular? I guess that's sort
no.
Of,
I wasn't. Very surprising.
I know you got into theater when you were young,
which is I love that you just equated being in theater with not being popular.
But I can only assume.
But let
of
me
my
tell
experience.
You, I think we are very similar in that way. For me, this was my experience. I wanted more than anything to belong to something.
Yeah,
and belonging to something for me meant a jacket comes with it.
Okay.
And they had jackets for softball, so that's where I went first.
Yeah.
And this pathetic... Okay, here, I need to paint a picture for you, too.
Love it.
I was as tall as I am now, which is rather tall, 5'9".
Yep. Yep.
I was probably, I want to say 25 pounds thinner than I am right now. Mm-hmm. I'm 120 right now.
Beanpole.
Yeah. I had a remarkable buck teeth. I had braces for 6.5 years because it was sort of the year they came out with them.
They
were invented. I sometimes wore a back brace.
No, you didn't.
Sometimes I did. I had a retainer and then some for, I feel like 2 years, but it was probably 2 weeks, one of those retainers that you with the brace around the back of your head.
This is a John Hughes movie.
I had remarkably greasy hair all the time.
How was your skin?
Oh, actually, I had really good skin, but you couldn't see it past the retainer.
You weren't unpopular.
You couldn't see it past the retainer.
That's all I could focus on.
But it was... You know, now as
that's
a mom,
amazing.
It just kills me when I see, kids. But so I, all that stuff didn't go over so well. I think, I tried out for softball and needless to say, I have no idea. Didn't go. So I didn't get that jacket.
Yeah.
Tried out for cheerleading. And on my life,
you
this
tried out.
Honey,
that's the confidence thing I'm going to talk about. Because that's impressive to even take that chance.
Well,
it's amazing.
Very large ego, very low self-esteem at this point.
Yeah.
So I try out for cheerleading. And the girls, God bless them, truthfully thought I was joking and laughed. And I went along with it. Like, I know, right? Like, I would want to be a cheerleader. But I got to say, it was around that time that I realized, well, I'm kind of funny. Is that something?
Yeah.
Is there a jacket for that? And it turned out there was kind of a jacket for that. When I was in fifth grade in the yearbook, I was voted class clown. And that was something. And all I wanted was, I wanted a label.
Sure.
I wanted a jacket. I wanted a label. And I think all kids, sadly, I don't want this for my son. I don't want him to want a label.
Yeah.
But sadly, I think you are looking for who you are.
Absolutely.
For kids of that age, a jacket tells other kids who you are.
Yeah.
I am an athlete.
Yeah.
I am. Well, we didn't have jackets for the theater club in my school.
Yeah.
But I thought, well, it's something that I feel like I could do. So I went that way. I became the president of the theater company at our high school, which was actually a big deal. It was a very big school, Staples High School.
Yeah.
A lot of kind of, you know, cool big deal people went there.
I'm going to assume that that's not branding and marketing and that it was not owned by the Staples.
No.
We were totally the Staples Stadium.
We were totally old school. It was before Staples was cool. But I badly wanted to be long. Yeah. I did not belong. But when I got, you know, classic story, when I got to the theater, and then, you know, by senior year, the braces came off.
Yeah.
Put on a little weight in some of the right places. Mm-hmm. Got a perm.
Hey.
Got a nose job for my 16th birthday, which now I've rebroken and it's crooked.
Wonderful.
So it started to look up for me.
But that's senior year.
Senior year. But I had a remarkable amount of self-esteem come from theater and come from being funny.
Yeah.
And that made me part of, and I think propelled me onto a summer program that I did where I met Tom Lennon. We were 17.
Yeah, you guys have known each other for over 20 years.
Yeah, we went to Northwestern summer program, the Cherubs, which was a, you know, really intense, crazy theater camp. And then we both said, we're going to go to NYU.
Yeah.
And that's where we met all the other guys and started the new group, which became the State.
And I think college tends to be, I don't have, by the way, a degree in psychology or counseling or anything like that.
You know what?
That.
This interview is over.
I'm sorry. Carrie, please don't.
I misread the card.
Yeah,
I misread the card.
I know. And I know that I come off like I'm a real expert in a lot, but...
Well, it's the jacket.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah.
I knew. I actually had done a little
research. She has a jacket that says expert
on
the back.
And on the back it says, yes, I do know.
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem like, you know, you sort of understand college to be for a lot of people growing up, where you kind of come into your own maybe a little bit more than high school.
I wish for all children to skip from preschool to college. It is killing me. Thank God my son is handsome, big, coordinated, and funny.
Yeah.
Because, dear God,
Did you ever get bullied?
I did get bullied.
You did?
I did get bullied.
Me too.
But you know what I did my sixth grade year is I one day bullied another girl.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'll remember it like it was yesterday. Because I thought, this is the only way out of this.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, we were on the school bus. I mean, this is classic after school special, and it's all I needed.
Yeah.
I had been being bullied by these other girls. I then got on the school bus one day, and a girl who, it's sort of like, you know, the classic Alcoholics Anonymous, like you're laying on the gutter and you're laughing at the guy that's down, like being washed away
inside
into the gutter.
The drain, yeah.
I saw the one girl who I thought could be a target or seen as less than me at that particular moment.
Yeah.
And I pulled her glasses off of her face for a show, you know, and sort of turned around like, is everybody catching this?
Yeah.
And no, this was not sixth grade. This was fifth grade.
Okay.
And she slugged me so hard, which sent my white skinny ass tumbling off the school. I mean, I never again. Never, ever, ever again. And I knew. And I knew, even at that time, this is not the right thing
I'm
to
sure
do.
I'm sure your
this
heart was just racing.
Right.
And yeah.
But I'm desperate to be part of. And maybe this is it. Well, I found out really quickly that was not the way.
Well, it sounds like that was
and
maybe
then
be, for
the
then
best. Became
like,
friends.
What would have happened? You know what I mean? How could that have changed
what would have changed it is, and I think it often happens with kids, is it works.
Yeah.
People accept you.
Yeah.
And then it continues and continues. I'm horrified by these videos that I'm seeing of kids, because all kids have camera phones now. I mean, I have chills right now of these kids beating each other up with kids surrounding them. I mean, I suppose it's always gone on. I feel like it's getting worse. I'm just so glad I'm not a child in this time.
Know.
You know,
that's how I feel. And I always wonder, I mean, I guess I am finally at the point in my adulthood where I find myself thinking those things more. I find myself saying those things more.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering where, because I don't have kids yet, but I'm wondering where the crossover happened between, because if I walk into a group of teenage girls, that's kind of the immediate wake-up call that I'm not that person anymore. Mm-hmm. But without those, like, if I do, like, a volunteer group or something, without those girls right in front of me, I often feel like, oh, yeah, I'm the same. Like, oh. I really haven't changed at all until I see those girls, and then I go, okay, wait, I'm older. I'm definitely not in that headspace. No, wait, do you have a kid?
Because I am immediately reduced to being 5 years old with my son.
Right.
And we get into arguments. Like, my husband's like, you're 41. You just told him that that's yours and pulled it out of his hand. I have that sort of complex too. I think that might have something to do with being an actor too.
Well, I guess that was kind of what I was thinking too, in terms of thinking about, even just when you were talking about wanting to find your voice and wanting to kind of belong, or at least understand, if I don't belong here, I do belong here. I mean, isn't that kind of, haven't we sort of ended up chasing that forever? There's this feeling of like, I'm still trying out for cheerleading because I'm going into a room and someone's kind of looking me over. Maybe they laugh at me for not the right reason.
I believe that having children is the biggest joke on humanity, because I now am reliving. I feel like there was a 2-year respite. And I became an adult and I accepted it, and I could look in the mirror and say, I look good.
Right.
I'm successful in my career. Yeah. I have a successful relationship. I have a beautiful home.
Yeah.
Here comes a kid, and I am reliving every moment of it. The wetting the pants at the party, and we don't have extra. I mean, just the most, and I'm reliving it as an adult who wishes I could shake that person and say, It's not always going to be like this, but for a while it is.
Yeah.
And for a while it's going to really suck.
Yeah.
But look, I want to put like a diorama up and go, this was me. This is the stages, and look at now.
Yeah.
So it's going to be okay. And I do try and give the process the benefit of the doubt and say, it's character building.
Yeah.
It's character building.
Yeah.
But I am one of those moms that has to hold myself back when at the playground an older kid says, you're dumb, I don't want to play with you, and let my son have his experience.
Yeah.
Because now I feel that way about all children.
Yeah.
Which is even harder. So if I'm at the grocery store and I see a kid,
I feel that way, and I'm not even a mom.
I'm raw again. Maybe it's age.
Protective.
Maybe it's an age, because we've been there.
Yeah. Did your mom, I mean, obviously, all due respect to your parents, but did you feel like you had a great connection with your parents when you were a teenager? Did they trust you? Did they not trust you? Did you feel like you...
I had the world's best connection with my parents.
Nice.
My father would have these experiences, you know, that he would share with me. He would mess up sort of in his emotions and come to me and say, I messed up, you know, this is how I feel. I shouldn't have said that. It was very real. It was, it was very dynamic. It was big. And my mom was very even keel, which I think was a nice combination for me, because I'm capable of being that, but I'm also capable of the raw, enormous, explosive emotion.
Right.
But I called my mom the first time I did cocaine.
I was
working at a restaurant, and I'll clarify now and say, I don't do cocaine. I don't do drugs. I don't even drink alcohol.
Yeah.
One glass of wine every 2 months. But if I were a drug addict, this wouldn't be such a great story. I tried all those things once.
Yeah, me too.
And, that not once, some of them more than once, but I don't do them now.
When I was
17, I worked at a restaurant, and if anyone has ever worked in a restaurant on the East Coast, you know that there's a lot of things going on there, and I tried cocaine, and I called my mom and I said, Mom, I don't know if you need to take me to the hospital or what. I just snorted cocaine. And my mom's like, okay, calm down. So my mom came and got me. She drove me home. She sat and sort of fanned me down.
Wow.
And was like, we'll talk about this in the morning.
Wow.
And that
is amazing. I was afraid to tell my parents anything that I was doing that was wrong. And I started when I was really young in high school, too young.
Yeah.
And I was terrified of admitting that. And my mom always assumed the worst, and my dad always assumed the very best.
Yeah.
So either way, I felt like angry at my mom for thinking the worst of me and really mad at her when she was right and not wanting to tell her that. Like, I don't want to tell her I got high.
Yeah.
And then absolutely not ever wanting my dad to think that I was anything but, you know, this kind of great kid who was, So it's really cool that you had that relationship with your mom where you could do that and she would.
There's the bark.
Yeah.
I'm out here.
It sounded a little more desperate than I
sounded
expected.
Like maybe
he's probably holding on to it for a long time because he knew we were recording.
He just woke up.
Yeah. Bless his heart. I just gave the dog a greenie.
Just an update.
I don't know what we're going to do if the dog isn't around for any some of these podcasts. I'm going to have nothing to talk about. We were just saying it's amazing that you were able to have that relationship with your mom where she didn't. Yeah. So she trusted you enough that she knew if my daughter's doing this, I'd rather know. And I'm going to be kind of even keel about it.
I'll tell you this. This is my favorite, my mom story. She's a superhero. I don't remember how it happened, and she doesn't remember either or claims not to. but I was at the age where we were still going to my pediatrician, but I was sexually active. Mm-hmm. I think I was 16. Mm-hmm. And
so you were 16. So this is, and I want to put this in a context just because a lot of us might still be thinking of back brace, braces.
Yeah. Retainer. See, okay, here. This is the year. The braces came off.
Okay, so this is the junior nose year job. Senior year?
This is junior year.
Okay.
Right, 16, junior year.
Okay.
The braces come off.
Got it.
Perm.
Got it.
Again, I don't know how many times I have to say perm, Janet.
Yeah, no.
I had a perm.
It could have just been the perm and everything else.
I don't know what they put in that thing, but it was like... Yeah.
Really, I always
really got
a perm.
The fellas
I wanted
going.
I wanted a full-on fro. I honestly did, and I knew I would never get that, so I didn't get a perm because I knew it would just be frustrating.
No, I had just sort of a lame, smelly perm,
a crinkly poodle.
But at the time, it worked.
That's what you did.
It was a man magnet. I got you
so
know.
You went from like, did you have any boyfriend? Like, did you have boyfriends when you were a little more awkward?
I did. I had a boyfriend in high school who was wonderful. I'm actually still friends with him now. He's an editor. He moved here to LA.
Nice.
He and his wife have two adopted children. And
they
he was my boyfriend,
Carrie.
And
weird.
They named what this is getting weird.
Weird.
he's here now.
Oh, yeah. Hello.
Yeah. He was my boyfriend for 3 years in high school, and he was a straight edge hardcore kid, straight edge, like no sugar, no, I don't know about
Whoa.
Sugar, no, but no, no alcohol, no fun.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I loved him. We had a great time together.
Maybe some chocolate milk. No, too much.
You're pushing it. No. We had a lot of fun together, but my senior year, then I started dating, my freshman year, I dated a senior.
Hey.
But I still didn't look great. He was just, I was easy. And then my sophomore, junior, senior year, I had that same boyfriend.
Got it.
Up into college.
Got it.
Anyway, here I am, 16, heaving breasts, perfect skin. I met the pediatrician with my mom.
Yeah.
Because that's what we still, it was.
She was going to go in with
she
you.
She was going to go in with me. And I said, you know, I'm just going to run in and see Dr. Shoup by myself just real quick. You can finish whatever you have to do out here. Finish, read Goodnight Moon again, whatever you want to do. Have a Pop-Tart.
Not date anyone.
A priest or.
Yeah.
And, God, I hope my parents don't hear this. So then I went in and I said to my doctor, who, God love him, that he was the town doctor. You know, he'd been around forever and he was a listener. And in fact, on his desk was a stone that engraved that said, learn to listen.
Aww.
Learn to listen. I'll never forget that. And
I'm sorry. What was it? Sorry.
What? Oh, God.
You could, that no, horrible you bit.
Not. But anyway, what was I saying? I tried to do a bit on your bit and the bit didn't work. But anyway, he was incredible. He was wonderful to have growing up. I also had a therapist for about a year because my parents were divorced and her name was Dr. Mold. This is true. I feel like she was 100, might have been 95.
Bless her.
And she just would sit and analyze me while I colored. And so I was smart enough at 7 to draw like houses on fire and parents with their heads cut off.
Because
I was like, I'm on to you, bitch.
Dr. Mold.
And she'd be like, I think we've got a problem. And I was like, I'm fine. Then my parents got divorced. I get it. They don't love each other. They love me. I didn't do anything wrong. Let's move forward. But so at this doctor visit, I go and I say, Dr. Shoup, it just terrified of his judgment. And I said, I had a sexual encounter. I don't know how I put it. And he said, okay. I said, so I guess, like, I don't know, I need birth control or, you know, I have a boyfriend and, you know, it's only one part. I'm not, you know, and he's like, okay, he said, I'm not judging, but I've known your mom for 30 years and I really feel, Carrie, as your friend and doctor, that we need to bring her in here right now because I feel like I know your mom probably better than you do.
Mm.
She, it's going to be okay. Well, that moment between the doctor going out and bringing my mom in, I'll never forget.
Oh.
And my mom, God love her. God love her. Sat in that chair, tears welling up in her eyes. you know, sort of nodding, and she kept saying, you know, do you know what this means? You know, this is an emotional experience. This is not just a physical, this is emotion. I'm having this conversation with my poor mother in this room. And God love her. She said, if this is what you're going to do, and I can't talk you out of it, and I've given you all the information, and I'm here to answer questions, then let's also put you on birth control.
Yeah.
And they did. They had me circumcised. And, that's not the right word. They, you know what I mean. Castrated.
She put a chastity belt on me.
They put me on, I think it was, I can't remember what it was called, but it was just one of the low level birth control pills or something. I was on it for a while. And then we broke up, and then I went to college and then started having, you know, a more normal relationship.
If I ever touch on anything, you're like, it's nobody's business.
Right now I'm talking about my vagina, I don't know where you're going to go. That's going to be weird.
Well, I guess. Well, you see, it's easy for the comedy people to talk about the vagina, but what about the heart, Carrie? The heart. That's tough.
Not sure. You want me
again,
to talk about?
Again, with the dog and the shittiness.
Speaking of.
Scott.
I love that your dog's name is Scott.
Honestly.
I just love that it's so pedestrian.
Here's what I found out I say, because someone called me on it who comes over here for, I have this regular salon group where we meet and ostensibly are learning about things we wouldn't know about otherwise, because I feel like
that's
I'm getting
awesome.
More stupid as I get older.
I feel like I haven't been invited to that, but go on.
Now that I know you're interested.
Yeah. All right.
I guess I've said this more than once when my dog has been misbehaving in front of other people, apparently to the point where she thought it was a command.
Oh, no.
Scott, under no circumstances. Just organically coming out of my mouth.
You'll be a good parent.
I say that.
You'll
evidently,
be a very
I
good
say
parent.
Under no circumstances.
Yeah.
Repeatedly.
My son goes into the backyard now. And when I say, go tell daddy it's time for dinner, he goes in the background and backyard and he goes, Steve! In the most obnoxious. And I was like, that's what he hears
I'm
coming out of my mouth.
I'm raising him to be a jerk. Yeah. I get, so this is my question. My question is, I'm just looking back at who I was and when I started having sex, and I mean, I guess it's always the question of how right were you? Were you ready? And was your mom right? Was it really more emotional than maybe it felt, or did it feel like it was a really big emotional thing for you too?
It was a big emotional thing for me. I'll tell you that my first experience was with somebody that it shouldn't have been with. Mm-hmm. And it was just because that person, I was a freshman. He was a senior. He didn't care about me.
Yeah.
But I was doing that girl of, someone's paying attention to me, and he's more important than me somehow because of the age and because he's cute and, you know, he has a car.
Yeah.
So it was not right. That he didn't, you know, abuse me in any way, any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, he couldn't have known that
really, it shouldn't have been at that time.
Yeah.
But then my second encounter was with a boyfriend that I truly loved.
Yeah.
I truly, truly did love. I stayed with him for 4 years up into college. He's still a friend of mine today.
Yeah.
So that was, I have no regrets about that. That was a lovely experience, a lovely relationship. And I have no regrets about that. I do feel in hindsight, like it was all too young.
Yeah.
If I could go back and do it again, I would say maybe college.
Yeah.
Maybe not even college. Maybe just towards the end of college would, if I could change things, that's when it would be. Because I think it was more emotional than I was allowing myself, more emotionally imprinting than I realized.
Yeah.
At the time, I just thought, this is what I want to do. Other people are doing this. Of course, this must make sense for me. It makes sense for them.
Right.
In hindsight, it's a big deal.
It's a big deal, and it does feel like, I mean, I definitely know that women who are friends of mine today who are maybe, you know, more kind of sexually active in terms of having multiple partners and stuff than I ever was, still seem to slide into that place of, I think I'm doing this for me, and I think I'm liberated in that way, and yet somehow I still end up longing for the phone to ring, even if he wasn't that important to me going into it. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, if we're this fragile in our 30s and 40s and 20s, how is it to be a teenager and to feel like, yeah, he's cool, so we had sex, and then somehow make his or her, you know, if you're gay, but to make that person's feelings about you or how they treat you, you're already thinking to yourself, like, it's so important what everyone else thinks. It's so important how I come off to everyone else. And so much of our value seems to come out of that behavior. It just makes you wonder, like, if you're doing it with somebody who's maybe doesn't respect you or you don't respect, you're just not connected with in the way you should be.
And I don't
is that changing?
I don't think you can really possibly know at that age either. And I hated hearing people say that.
Yeah.
I really did.
Yeah.
And I hated when I would hear my mom say, you don't have the emotional capacity. I would say, you don't know my capacity. And really it's experience. It's life experience.
Yeah.
But I also think if it were simply about emotion, I would say maybe, yeah, have at it and see if you're tough enough. When you mix in possible deadly STDs and children, that's an explosive combination.
Yeah.
And I have friends who got pregnant in college who now have 21-year-old children, 25-year-old
amazing,
children.
Isn't it?
I am barely capable as a mother of a 5-year-old. I have friends who have diseases that they got in high school and couldn't get partners through it. You know, all these different things. Or I know people who have gotten diseases and died from them because of sexual encounters. So it's hard to compartmentalize and say when you just talk about it as an emotional, when are you as an individual ready. It's hard to just put it in that because it doesn't just involve that. It involves everything.
Right.
It also involves how other people see you because people will find out. That's the number one thing when you're younger is about other people knowing.
Right.
Everyone will know.
Right.
Everyone will know.
Right.
And everyone will exaggerate it.
Right.
So I'll never forget the girl in fifth grade who everyone claimed gave a blowjob to another guy under the bleachers. I don't know if it happened or not, but something happened.
My God, there's so many blowjobs under bleachers in every school,
but
everywhere.
What's funny is
there were so many rumors.
That girl has now contacted me on Facebook as an adult, and I think of her like you think of people from your past with one sentence.
Yeah.
You know, that's the you know, girl who, you know, worked at the mall. That's the girl. This
her nose
is the girl who gave a blowjob under the bleachers in fifth grade.
Oh, my God.
And what a shame.
Wow.
You know,
what a shame.
She, I think, like, now is a diplomat or something. Oh. Right? No, you're not. You're the girl who gave
a
blowjob.
That's crazy.
So,
So how do we convey, like, if there are girls who are listening right now who are fans of yours or who are just kind of looking to be heard by, you know, thinking about somebody who's funny, who's charismatic, who's beautiful, but also not afraid to be foolish and silly and be one of the boys, whatever that means.
I also knit and I have a driver's license.
You're also very crafty.
And a passport.
I'm pleased to hear you have a driver's license. That's very unusual for
just
Los
got it
Angeles.
Back.
Good,
just got it
good
back.
News.
Yes. Just kidding.
How should we communicate? Is there a way for us to communicate? Like, hey, I know that it sounds super lame that we're like, now we're old ladies and we're telling you to wait or whatever, but how do we, or is it just everybody has to have their own experience and all we can do is say, hey, we're here on the other side and it gets better, but also don't be afraid to go against the curve and wait and not necessarily have sex so early. Because I do feel like teens are having, are we just the old ladies now that we thought our parents were? Like, it's in the old days.
I think it is both.
But kids are definitely, like, I went to the Nickelodeon's Kids' Choice Awards. The girls were dressed like I would never have felt comfortable dressing. You could see they were wearing tube skirts.
Well, my mom's thing with me was in high school, I was not allowed to wear clogs or hanging earrings because it made me look like I was asking for it.
Yeah.
I was loose with my clogs and my
earrings. I dressed like a super punk rock,
but I was
baggy.
Oh, yeah.
Was baggy.
No, I could wear makeup to be punk rock.
Yeah.
I couldn't wear seductive lip gloss and things like that.
Yeah.
In hindsight, I'm so grateful. In Malibu now, there are these girls that, I mean, God bless my husband, trying to be out in the water on surfboards with these girls. I mean, 17 years old with like tattoos, like fuck me all across their back.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I mean, I don't know. I I wish I could grab them and say, as the old lady now, stop it.
Yeah.
But there's more for you. There's more for you. And the risks are too big and all that stuff. But it will go in one ear and out the other, I believe. The only thing that I think can stop people from doing it is a certain amount of self-esteem.
Right.
And I think that self-esteem and not having to go with everybody else's flow all the time, that self-esteem is hard to... You haven't had a lot of years to gain that self-esteem. And if you don't have a super solid family and female role models and male role models, you can't just automatically have it. The only thing I would say that maybe you and I could be of any help in is to say, look, I was a gawky girl. I didn't have a lot of friends. I didn't have a lot of boyfriends. I came into myself. I had some experiences in hindsight as now a kind of cool 41-year-old with a pretty great career and fantastic family and marriage and all that stuff. I wish I had waited.
Yeah.
I wish I had waited. Did it kill me? No. Would I not have the things I have now? I don't know.
Yeah.
But just to hear that.
Yeah.
And if that means anything.
Did you have?
Thing I was going to say was,
oh, yeah,
we're lucky.
Yeah.
Because
we are. I do have friends who made the same choices and the outcomes were very
different. That's right. I feel like it's a bit of a roulette game.
Yeah, it is.
And I think of the times I got into friends' cars when they were driving drunk and it was funny at the time. And then the car next to us, you know, figuratively, those kids are all dead.
Yeah.
We just lost a 15-year-old boy at the top of our hill a couple weeks ago. Killed.
Yeah.
Drunk driving. I mean, he's in the car with his brother. His brother's drunk. They're both dead.
Not
Mom lost her whole life. That's it. It's over.
Yeah. It
doesn't mean a lot when you're that age because it's not going to happen to you. It didn't happen to me.
Yeah.
It didn't happen to
but
you.
But it did.
But it happened to the third
to
person who's not sitting here today.
I know. It's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. And that's same with me. Like, getting high and then letting my friend let me spend the night at some guy's house. Not even in a sexual way, but just like, oh, he's a friend of a friend and he's going to let us crash there. I'm so lucky I wasn't raped. I've never been raped. I honestly don't know how that happened.
I agree. I am the same way. How about, and this is not bragging, and it is funny. It's funny in hindsight because I came out on the other side.
Right.
How about I woke up on a mattress on St. Mark's Place with my skirt up I was in a band. I was in a punk band.
Yeah.
I had done coke that night. Then we played. And then the sun was rising and I couldn't make it up to my 7th floor walk up. So this looks like a comfy place to lay. I mean, the amount of steps that it took for me not to have something happen to me that night and every night is remarkable. Did I have fun? Yeah. Do I have great memories? Yeah. Am I incredibly lucky that the roulette wheel landed where it was? Yes. And that's, I don't know if it's God and what it is for you or what it is for anybody, but it doesn't mean it can't be me tomorrow for making bad choices. And it doesn't mean it can't be somebody who hasn't made those choices yet.
Right.
Why not just make the right choice? Then you know you'll be okay.
I know.
There's plenty of great experiences to have when you get older.
Yeah.
Plenty of them.
Yeah. So when did you start playing music? And banjo, I know you play. That's a kind of a long way from punk rock.
Okay,
and
first
bass
A,
and Janet, Blake.
Stop immediately. Because I do not play the banjo.
Really?
Somebody put on my Wikipedia page, not just that I play banjo, but that I'm an avid banjo player. And you know what? I have not taken it off because I find it so wonderful. I'm like, you're damn right I play banjo.
I was totally ready to believe it.
But what I do play is ukulele now, which is kind of funny.
And you know, I have a mandolin hanging there that I still don't know how to play
next gift for my husband is mandolin lessons because that's my next instrument. I'm a bluegrass fanatic.
Yeah, me too. Well, I think we may be starting
we're the
bluegrass
same person.
Band, you and me, because... Okay. Yeah, I love it, and yet for some reason I play guitar and bass and
Oh no, mandolin is another animal.
You know, because the tuning is so
750 strings.
Yeah, I can't. I don't know about that. So, but when did you start? So you started on guitar.
Oh well, no.
Or did you start on bass?
No. Yes. No.
Math harp.
Time's up.
Damn.
I'll tell you the story in a nutshell, which is a pretty great one, and it's pretty, like, go-go girl power story.
Right.
My two girlfriends of mine, we lived in New York on the Lower East Side, and one was an actress, one was a fashion designer, and we all, each of us had boyfriends.
Is this your 20s, your college
this
years?
This is my 20s.
Okay.
This is towards the end of college. So this is, like, 1991.
Okay.
So I hadn't graduated yet. we had boyfriends in bands, big bands. And we said they were all on tour all the time. Some big bands, some, you know, whatever. But they were very successful in their world mm-hmm. of music. So we all lived in these tiny apartments with, like, instruments falling on our heads from, right. from our significant others. While all of the boys separately were away on tours with their bands, we said, hey, as a joke, let's each grab an instrument from the apartment, one of our apartments. We'll rent one of those spaces down there for an hour, write a song, right? And then when they get back, we'll be like, hey, we have a band right? So we met. I grabbed a bass guitar. The drummer grabbed some drums, had never played in her life. The guitar player grabbed a guitar. She had never touched a guitar. I never touched a bass. We got to the space. We asked the owner, Janito, who was a very nice guy on Avenue A, how to plug it in. He showed us, and it was funny for 5 minutes, and then it was fun.
Yeah.
And then it was inspiring. And then we met the next day, and the next day, and the next day. Oh, well, about, I guess, a month in, maybe 2 months in, someone from the next room leaned their head in and said, hey, I'm hosting a party in Brooklyn this weekend. Do you guys want to play it? And we were like, oh, no, this isn't what you think it is. You know, we're not really a band. And he said, well, I've been listening and you're a band. So we said, okay, well, we have 5 songs. And he said, great, play 5 songs. So we played 5 songs at this party in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And John Zorn, who's an avant-garde, who's a jazz musician, who has had a label called Avant, which was a Japanese label, was at the party. And he said, would you like to make a record?
Oh, my God.
And we said,
crazy.
Well, we have 5 songs.
Yeah.
How many do we need? He said, 10. We said, okay, we can write 5 more songs.
Yeah.
So we recorded an album in New York with the 10 songs, I think it was, that we had. It was put out on a Japanese import label called Avant.
Yeah.
Well, within 2 months of it being out in the world, we got 3.5 stars in Rolling Stone magazine.
Oh, my gosh.
We got 2 pages so awesome. Spread and spin, and they said it's the hottest new sound.
I remember this, yeah.
Smashing Pumpkins were saying we'd never heard anything like this.
Yeah.
We were befriending all these music people who were saying, you know, where have you been, and how do you make that sound? And we just kept saying, honestly, we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah.
And we can't copy anybody because we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah. It's a great album.
It's a great album.
What was
great
the first
album.
Song you guys wrote off that?
Bum Leg.
It was Bum Leg.
Yeah.
Okay.
There was
All
a
right.
guy I used to know. His name is Joe. He used to live across the street. And the chorus was, your dad works for my dad.
Yeah.
So it was all very juvenile, like, you know, all the kind of stuff we're talking about sort of.
Well, it's fun. I mean, it's definitely like the lyrics in a lot of the songs, or most of the songs, are sort of funny and witty. But
yeah, it
they
was
don't
an outlet.
Feel jokey.
It was
they
another
just feel
outlet.
Like,
it was
you
another
know,
outlet,
voice.
Another, I don't want to say diary, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, it's stream of conscious. So,
oh my God.
Well, when that came out, we thought, well, maybe we are onto something a little bit.
Yeah.
And again, it was a hobby. I had my own TV show. I was doing Viva Variety.
Yeah.
Nina was doing big theater in New York, and Jody was working for Donna Karan. And I think because we weren't so concentrated on it, we then played a show after that album, and I look out in the audience, we're at the original Knitting Factory, and Rick Ocasek is standing there. And he came backstage afterwards and said, I'd love to record you guys. And we said, well, of course you would. I mean, obviously. No, we were shocked. And he took us to Electric Ladyland Studios in New York, and we recorded a single. He produced a single of ours. From that, we were playing another show at the Knitting Factory, and Rick said, I have a couple friends I want to bring to see you play. And we said, okay, put them on the list. Just put me +5.
Yeah.
So the next night we're playing there, and down the aisle comes – everyone's 10 feet tall, too. Rick Ocasek, his wife, Paulina Porizkova.
Right.
Jim Jarmusch.
Yeah.
David Byrne. Neil Young.
Yeah.
And – Neil comes up to us after the show and says, how do you want to be on my label? I'm starting a new label off of Warner Brothers. And we said, you can go fuck yourself. No, we said, absolutely. Yes, please. And so we had a 3-record deal with Neil. We did 2 and we toured with him. We did the Horde tour.
Yeah.
And we did Europe a couple times. And we still owe him a record. Anytime I see him.
I think only 1 is on iTunes. Is that true?
I think only 1 is on iTunes. We
that's
have,
one that has
we have a total
and,
of 3 albums.
Yeah.
Ashley's the one that's about to have a baby, actually.
Oh, my gosh. That's so funny.
But, yeah. Anytime I see any of the record label people or Neil or anyone from that group, they always say, you owe us 1 more record.
Yeah.
So I like that it's out there floating around that maybe someday we would.
I wonder if they would let us. I wonder if I could put one of Cake-like's songs on at the end of this podcast.
I don't see why not.
People could enjoy.
I don't see why not.
So people could enjoy.
So people could enjoy.
You said one thing that I just have to jump back to.
I have to go to the bathroom?
About keeping a diary.
Oh,
no.
To keeping a diary.
But did you keep a journal? Did you keep a diary when you were a teen?
Sometimes. I was spotty with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It felt so important to me to... I sort of wish I had that same impetus now. Like that drive. Because that fire of... Oh God, I gotta say this stuff. I've got to talk about how I'm feeling.
It's
and
funny
I've gotta,
you think that because my first thought that stops me every time when I think I want to write something down is, I guess because now I'm sort of in this maybe the second half of my life, I think to myself, if I die tomorrow, don't write anything that's going to piss anybody off.
Right.
Because you don't want that to be the last.
I don't feel that anymore. I don't feel that drive.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Maybe it's the best. But when I was
that's
a teenager.
I got to get it out.
So many. And at the time, it felt like. Most of the time, it felt like what I had to say was so important, and I look back, and I was so boy crazy. Like, I think I thought, I don't know what I, my memory of what I was writing and how I was feeling and the fact that I think I thought it crossed all spectrums of my being versus the reality of cracking one of those open and realizing that 9 times out of 10, whatever that driving force was, boiled down to a boy. Like, it boiled down to, I just need, I need to say these things about how he was looking at me and whether that means something.
Mine were like that too. Mine were like that too.
And then if I was happy and like in a stable relationship for a while or nothing much was going on, I definitely didn't need to sit down and write about anything.
Yeah.
But
it was cathartic. I agree. Yeah. And I think that's part of what the band was too. It was sort of towards the end of that period where I have something to say, damn it, you know.
Which, but kind of nice to have that indelible record of it.
It's incredible.
In a way, to that nostalgia.
Oh, we're so blessed. I so lucky. Absolutely.
That's fantastic.
And to have other people say, good for you, I approve of that.
Yeah.
Is nobody can, you can't ever argue and say, you know, that doesn't feel good, because it does.
And then in terms of for you with comedy, then and now, I mean, it sounds like you came from kind of your dad is a performer and
My dad's he's a voiceover actor. He's the Cocoa Puffs bird and he was Lion-O, Lord of the Thundercats, which is
fantastic.
A big deal in the '80s.
It's still a big deal to many.
Matt is not.
It's still a big deal to many
way,
people.
In a large
way. He is not.
My dad's actually doing the new Thundercats. He's playing Lion-O's father, I think.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
I want to say it all comes full circle, but that just seems
that would
real
be weird.
Pretentious.
That would be weird.
Real pretentious for a conversation about the Thundercats. But so, just to revisit the kind of humor comedy kind of stuff, it sounds like it maybe came out of two places. It came out of like actually having a family or having parents who were funny.
Yeah, it was encouraged.
In my house.
Funny was being smart. Getting through school was. This was my thing. If I brought home a C, my dad would honestly say, did you do your best? And if, yes, I did, he would say, God bless you.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, intelligence was not encouraged, but it was not the most important thing in my family was humor.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So it's not so, but, and then did it feel like it came out of defensiveness as well as in terms of being kind of a kid who didn't fit in
or it
was already there?
No, it was already there. Yeah. I think I was freed to find it.
Yeah.
It was not, I didn't find it and say, aha, I found the secret weapon. It was more like, oh, phew, that's there.
Yes.
And it was always there at home. My dad and I would make videos all the time and little Super 8 movies
and
you know, reel-to-reel tapes and stuff. So it was always there. I didn't know that it could be a part of my everyday life and sort of be a source of self-esteem for me.
Yeah. And then my last question is just body image stuff in terms of talking about being gangly and being tall and kind of how boys and dating fit into that. I mean, how did you feel self-conscious in your body? Did you feel uncomfortable in it or did you embrace it? Did you feel like...
I would say, honestly, until about the last... 3 years, I have been more insecure than not about my body. And in the last couple of years, I don't know if it's about having, you know, when I got pregnant, I gained 90 pounds. I weighed 210.
You went for it.
I went for it.
Yeah.
And I did not exercise. And you know what? I loved it. I loved every minute. I loved every bit of my size. I loved all of it. I'm back down to my fighting weight of 120, which is pretty much the weight I've been my whole life. But when I look in the mirror now, I really, truly do feel, for the first time in my life, full of wrinkles, gray hair under the dyed hair.
Okay.
You know, the belly that I didn't have. But really, I really do. I think if you compared pictures of me now and 20 years ago, you'd say, well, yeah, 20 years ago, she looks prettier. But I feel prettier now. I feel better now. I have a self-confidence about myself, about my work, about my friendships, about my choices. But it took till now, which is great in some ways and not so great in some ways. But at 41, I am more comfortable in my skin than I've ever, which is not saying much because that's not that comfortable. But it's a hell of a lot more comfortable than I felt at 15.
You can only take it from where you are on a certain scale. It's the Carrie Kinney Silver scale.
That's right.
Well, you are stunning. You are one of my favorite dressers. I wish that I could break apart your entire outfit for the listeners, but I won't put them through it. But it could not be more adorable.
I'm wearing just overalls and flip-flops.
She is not wearing overalls and flip-flops. She has a mustache, which I wasn't expecting. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Janet. I've always adored you. You're sort of like the mama of comedy who brings us all together once a year for Sketchfest. So I would have done anything you asked me to, but this is important work here.
Well, you know.
It is.
I'm hoping that people who, you know, girls whose parents watched The State.
Yeah.
But also there's so many girls in their teens and 20s who love Reno.
Well, there is nothing for young girls. There is nothing but negative things for them to learn from. There's nothing but Jerseylicious and The Bachelor and all this stuff that P.S. I watch sometimes.
Yeah.
But I'm not, you know, as in much of a learning stage about myself as I was.
Yeah.
Thank God the primary influence when we were young were not some of the performers now and all of the reality television that there is now, because it's hard to wade through.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful that we made it through unscathed. And I think it's great that you're doing something for young women that is for once positive and maybe cool at the same time. And you don't have to, you know, just because it's not, you know, kids, you know, making crazy, dumb, weird choices doesn't mean it's not cool and smart.
Yeah. Well, I guess we should put our clothes back on.
Well, I guess. I don't know. I'm so comfortable. That girdle is great.
It's been very
tight.
Sexy times.
Yeah.
Carrie Kinney Silver, thank you so much.
Thank you, Janet. And I might need help getting up off the floor, if Matt, you could.
Yeah, we've got assistance for that.
Mother's
I've got a whole
now.
Crew of interns.
Yeah, mother's hip went out.
Leaving Nerdist.com.